Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Yes, welcome to The Anatomy of a Movie. I'm Christian Blatt, and this music can only indicate that we're about to talk about a fun romp. The 1979 film, Kramer versus Kramer versus the people versus Larry Flint versus Spy versus Spy versus Ford versus Ferrari. It's kind of a little joke we hatched before the show, but decided to run with it. Joined, as always, by the lovely Alexa Capiello.
Hi, I'm here.
And we have for the first time ever, we have the three of us all assembled.
Yeah, I know.
The also lovely Rachel Goodman.
Hey, everybody.
And, you know, Rachel, this is a very... We usually talk about Curb Your Enthusiasm on Mondays.
We do.
This is a little different.
This is a lot different.
Yeah, slightly different.
I feel like slightly less laughs.
Yeah, I feel like if Larry was in this place, this would have gone down a little bit differently.
No, Cheryl would have gotten the kid in the first 5 minutes. Yeah, it would have been fine.
He would have left him on the dumpster.
The way we do this retro anatomy of a movie, it's a movie that, for reasons often unbeknownst to the entire panel, we haven't seen, and we decide, like, okay, we're going to watch it, and this is our reaction after seeing it for the first time, after years of knowing we should see it, and not actively avoiding it, just didn't happen. So that's what we're doing here, and this is in honor of a couple things, in honor of it being a Best Picture from, I guess it won in 1980 for 1979, and also, it's, you know, there's some similar territory to Marriage Story. Which I still haven't watched. I can't.
After watching this, I wasn't
going to put myself through another one.
Bits and pieces. I've seen it here and there. I know you watched it all the way through, but it was painful. The bits I did watch.
You're talking about Marriage Story.
Sure. I of course watched Kramer versus Kramer.
Yeah.
It was difficult for me.
Okay, so Marriage Story. I feel like they pulled a lot
from Kramer versus a lot.
I was watching. So I just saw Marriage Story maybe a couple weeks ago, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It's by far, like, if I could have picked a Best Picture for 2020, it would have been Marriage Story, just because of how deeply it affected me. When I was watching Kramer versus Kramer, it was the same idea. I personally thought that Marriage Story felt a little more relevant to me, probably because it's a much newer movie.
Mm-hmm.
But still, Kramer versus Kramer, I think what I loved about it was the idea that things are not always black and white when it comes to parents, and the ability for these two people, especially, Dustin Hoffman's character, to recognize what his flaws are as a parent.
Sure. And my understanding is that that in Marriage Story, they also have a child or children. Right?
They have a child.
Yes.
And
okay.
It's the same idea.
Yeah, yeah.
The only difference is that, so Kramer versus Kramer, she just leaves and that's it.
Yeah.
In Marriage Story, it isn't like that. Adam Driver's character, actually does some things that are questionable. And both of them as parents, I feel, do questionable things.
He cheats on her, right? That's what happened.
He cheats on her, but then you find out later there was kind of a reason for it. Not that it's a good reason, but she was not innocent of,
So they both
had their issues, and it was really, nobody was leaving per se. It's just that one person decided they needed to divorce the other. And then, the unfortunate thing is the child gets caught in the middle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which I think is sort of, I think that the story in this film pays a lot of attention to the impact on Billy.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think that a lot of it, I think, is, a lot of just the interaction, it's about him. I would say one of the things we always do when we do the show, we start off talking about what we thought this movie was going to be like. This is pretty close to what I thought it was going to be. I didn't actually know how it ended. I wasn't quite sure what happened, how it all sorted out. But I'd say that this was, I've somehow at some point seen him falling off the jungle gym at the playground. Like, I knew that scene.
Yeah.
That's the one scene I'd ever seen. And but other than that, I didn't really know anything about the movie. But I still feel like it was what I thought. Was it what you thought, Alexa?
I had always heard really, really good things about this movie, in particular Meryl Streep's performance. And I'm a huge fan of the Meryl Streep. She's an amazing actress.
Yeah.
And this was actually her first... breakout performance. She was in The Deer Hunter, but she had a smaller role, and she really only just took it, apparently, just to be with her fiancé at the time, who passed, actually, right before this movie was being shot. We'll get into Meryl's whole story in just a moment. Absolutely. But did I want to watch this? I've been wanting to watch this movie for a very long time, not just because of the beautiful Meryl Streep and talented Meryl Streep, but because of the subject matter. And I heard that the writing was incredible, and it did not disappoint me. I thought all of it was great.
Right.
Meryl Streep was actually supposed to play the woman who steps in as the one night stand.
Yep.
And then it was just basically one thing led to the next. Somebody dropped out of the main role of Joanna, and that was it.
Yeah.
So she would have been the Jo Beth Williams part. Right. And last week with Stripes, we talked about when nudity didn't make sense. This one kind of did.
This one made sense. Yeah. This one, I felt wasn't bad as graphic
as in Stripes, by the way.
I felt bad for little Billy. Hey, he's like, what did he say to her? Like,
do you like fried chicken? Yeah. Look, as someone who's been a 7-year-old boy, don't feel bad. Don't feel bad for Billy.
I think it would have been better if he asked if she liked French toast to tie the French toast in. You know, do you like French toast?
Yeah. Come on, who makes French toast in a mug? But anyway,
that was such a disgusting, but also heartbreaking scene.
Yes, absolutely. Rachel, what was your expectation heading into this movie?
I expected I was going to love it. Because I loved Marriage Story, and this, you know, I had heard things about this movie. I had seen clips. Years ago, when I was still training to be an actress, I remember studying, you know, different pieces of the monologues from this movie because it was just very well written and powerful. And so I just remember it was always on my radar. So I went into this expecting I would love it. Actually watching it, I did very much enjoy it. I don't think I loved it as much as I was expecting to, though.
Okay.
And I think it was one of those situations where I hyped it up in my head so much that it was never going to live up to exactly it was never going to live up to what I thought it would. Plus, I think for me, because I love Marriage Story so much, it's harder for me to kind of connect to it in the same way.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. And I think it's probably more heartbreaking to watch the marriage between Kylo Ren and Black Widow fall apart than Silkwood and Tootsie, you know? What was the point you were going to make?
I was going to say that I did not watch, again, I didn't watch Marriage Story all the way through, but the parts that I did watch I felt were very self-indulgent. And I kind of did not get that feeling from this movie. I thought that they did a very good job of making it a very realistic divorce. Things that happened between these two characters, the mother and the father, and his relationship to his son, all of it I thought was so extremely realistic and not self-indulgent. I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. I was just watching Marriage Story and being like, oh, these people are just ridiculous. Just get over yourselves is what I kept on telling myself.
What
but
were
that
you
was
say, Rachel?
So I think I definitely understand where you're coming from. I think to most people, it would seem much more realistic watching Kramer be Kramer. But for me,
The opposite.
But that also because of my circumstances in life. And, like, you know, I come from a family with, you know, people who are divorced. And
so do I, actually.
Yeah.
So, I guess it's
interesting.
My parents divorced when I was an adult. So,
divorced kids.
So, but
we all empathize with Billy.
I was in my late 20s. It was just more like, you know, it was just more like, oh, good. Yeah, you two should be away from each other. You know, and even my sister had, like, graduated college, so it was good. It was let you guys sort it out. Yeah.
And see, that's very different. When you're a kid.
Sure.
It's different.
And
it's,
both of you were a kid when it happened?
I was in fifth grade.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, 11. Same exact thing.
Yeah, so.
Trauma bonding.
Yeah.
But that's why you're both here.
But see, for me, like, I watching Dustin Hoffman, watching Ted say to Billy, your mother loves you no matter what. Like, she didn't leave because of you. She left because of me.
I know that speech.
I was like, wow, why can't more people be like that?
Right. Yeah. That was the pinnacle of good, like, fatherhood.
He says all the right things. Yeah. Even at the end when he's lost the court case. And it's no small thing for him, by the way, to give up on the appeal, because it's like, I'm going to have to put Billy on the stand. He's like, well, I guess I'm not doing an appeal then. Yeah. You know? And I mean, I think that as a father, I certainly appreciate that instinct. It's like, you can't do that to your kid just so that you win, you know? And at the end, when near the end, when he's talking to him, like, it's going to be great. You're going to have a room at mommy's house. You're going to just all that. It's like, yeah, that is not always the way you hear about divorce going, you know, sort of that, you know, that just utmost respect for the child. And just the fact that, you know, we were talking about this movie beforehand, and it's this movie has a happy ending for only the only person who matters, which is Billy.
Yeah.
You know, there it's very sad for Joanna. It's very sad for Ted as well. I mean, ultimately, he gets what he wants, which is to keep Billy there in the house. But I think that they're both very much keeping it in mind. Now, sort of a loaded question I have for each of you. As this story is going along, did you find yourself siding with either one of them, or did you try to keep an open mind?
That's what I was going to actually say, is that so many times in these stories, you have one parent that's being demonized more than the other. And in the original book written by, author, okay, Avery Corman.
Yes.
He wrote Kramer versus Kramer. So the main character, played by Dustin Hoffman, Ted, is basically, you know, pretty much how he's portrayed by Dustin. And, you know, he's a good guy. He's definitely doesn't know how to be a dad just yet, but he learns how to be.
Yeah.
And Joanna is actually just not a very good person at all.
You're talking about, is that in the book?
Yes.
Okay.
She's just, you know, she's bored with her life as a housewife. She wants more for her life. I mean, they didn't take away that in the screenplay when they performed it, but Meryl Streep was like, but we need to come at this from a more sympathetic point of view for Joanna, because that's overall going to make the movie better if we have two parents who are equally sympathetic. And, you know, she had a disservice. I mean, Joanna just leaves, and we don't understand or get her point of view until much later. And that's why that courtroom scene where she's just talking about why she did what she did was so powerful. And she actually wrote that speech, Meryl Streep did.
And the thing is that, because originally she was not happy with how they wrote it in for her.
She wasn't. And neither was the director, who asked her to write that script, speech.
And it's such a little moment, too, but it's such a great part of her performance when she's on the stand, that after her attorney's done, she goes to get up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, that's not how this works,
right?
You know, and then, you know, he just hammers her on a bunch of things, and, you know, I mean, that's you know, unfortunately, they both got what they wanted in the way of a divorce lawyer. You need somebody who's going to just play rough because you are trying to win, you know, the case.
And that's one of the things that made me feel like this was that was so similar to Marriage Story, because one of the major things is that it's these lawyers in Marriage Story who are really, like, ratcheting up everything and being a little bit, they're being very aggressive, and the actual people are like, you know, we don't want to be like that, but it gets to a place in court where sometimes it's out of your hands in order for you to win, number one. But number two, when it comes to Joanna, I felt like her character, if she had just left and that had been it, and it had been very black and white, and she had just been a very bad parent and was gone for good, it wouldn't have been as rich to kind of have everything unfold the way that it did, and her coming back and having to face the consequences and then putting everybody through this trial. I felt like it was a very interesting way to handle the after effects of what this did to a broken family. My thing is, though, I don't necessarily dislike Joanna. I don't think that she's a bad person. I understand being in a situation, especially
where you feel trapped.
Especially in 1979, where women were still, like, it was starting to change, but women were still expected, for the most part,
to go be the
home,
mother,
be the wife. The man was going to work.
Yeah.
I understand Joanna, and we didn't get the full picture from her point of view. She probably tried talking to Ted
multiple
so many times, but
he's just work.
So I don't dislike Joanna. I still did not side with her because at the end of the day, whatever was happening, she left Billy. And that to me, I always empathize with the child more than the parents. Mm-hmm. And watching Billy's reaction to this, what did she think was going to happen to Billy's welfare for her to just leave? Like, as bad as things got for Ted, he didn't just leave his son.
See, the thing, what I was seeing from Joanna in that very first scene was just a broken woman, a woman who felt so trapped, and she was so depressed, like,
sure,
like clinically depressed, needed to figure out herself, lost everything that meant herself, you know, like was herself. She had no idea who she was. And when you get to that lowest of low point, it's very, very, very hard. I'm not saying that she did a good thing at all, but it is very hard to see beyond what you need to do for yourself to get yourself out of that hole. And so I saw all of that in Meryl. I saw somebody that couldn't do it anymore, just could not live the life that she was living, and she needed to do something else for herself to get herself in a better mental state so that she could actually be the mother that she wanted to be for Billy and who Billy deserved.
Yeah, Rachel, to your point about sort of the era that this story happens in, you know, when he's first talking to, Ted's first talking to his boss about it, he's like, yeah, you know, we got this neighbor downstairs, you know, they talk, and women's lib, you know, it's like not even fully formed thoughts. It's just sort of like, yeah, you know, and of course, I understand that point of view of like, oh, you know, we got into a fight, she'll come back, you know, I mean, in the early part of the film, I can certainly see, you know, because partially due to his inattentiveness or just preoccupation with work, he didn't notice that there was a problem. So this idea that she's leaving, he's like, come on, what are you doing? You know, like, what is this? So, yeah, I do find it to be a relatable character in the form of Joanna. And I would say I am certainly, I bring my own sort of issues as a father of two to this, the idea that the wife left for a good reason, but she did leave, you know, and she did go to California. She was gone for more than a year. It's not like
to find herself.
It's not a couple weeks and then right. She popped back in, you know.
She was gone for a whole year.
I think it was 15 months is the term that is the length of time. And so I find that to be like, I don't know what your problem is. Like, I don't know how you could do that to your child. I can't imagine leaving either of my children for 15 months for whatever. I mean, unless I'm going to jail, and I guess it's not up to me, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no. I was just going to say, and that's my problem with what she did. Not that she had, like, I completely understand being in her situation and not knowing what you want to do with your life, not being able to find your meaning. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, she even said that she didn't think she was any good as a mother either. I get all of that. Yeah. And I get how she was feeling, and I get how lost she probably was having a husband who wasn't listening to her. But to just leave your child and get help, you know, across the country and not check in. Like, it's one thing, okay, hey, I just need to go for a couple weeks. And, you know, she tells Ted and then she leaves and she just, you know, does what she has to do and come and maybe comes back. But, like, to just leave for that amount of time when you have a child who needs you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was, you know, it was. Obviously, I'm going to relate with some of the unique issues facing a father, but it just seemed like, well, he and Billy had all this time to really form this bond, and that's what he's comfortable with. And yes, he has the advantage that is their home. That's where he grew up. That's where he's used to living. So the idea of taking him out of it definitely seemed like, well, this seems like it would be detrimental. And look, I think ultimately if he had gone to live downtown with his mother and, you know, seen his dad a couple weekends a month and one night a week, that's what the judge decided, I'm sure he would have been okay. But it just seemed like this was best for him. And I think that the self-sacrifice from Ted first of just like, you know, I'm going to have to lose this because I'm not putting him on the stand. And just her like, oh, I won. But, you know, I mean, one of many great speeches in this film is her in the lobby with Ted just saying like, I was coming to bring him home, but then I realize he's already home, you know. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, they deal with so much really heavy stuff as it relates to a child. I think this is like a 15-minute short film if they don't have a kid, you know? Yeah. It's just like, all right, I guess I'm going to have to send you a check every month. All right, that didn't work out. You want to go get coffee? Sure. What were you going to say, Rachel?
Just that here's my problem, too. I love this ending. I love that she came around and realized that what was best for him was staying with Ted. But I just feel like in most situations when it comes to the custody of children, it's not going to work out like that. The parents, like, if somebody wins custody, they're not going to... Maybe this is just my, you know, pessimistic outlook on the way that on things that happen when parents break up, but I just feel like it was very like it almost felt like the Disney ending that we were all hoping for, you know.
Well, in the Disney ending, she moves back in and they're married again and they have a second wedding. And there's sure. talking birds and but I do know what you're saying.
I think that's what makes it so beautiful, though. You know that this was resolved out of court.
Yeah,
that they just. They both had realizations, and she had the biggest realization that even though she won, that doesn't mean that this would have been the best for Billy. And so to let him go and live with his father, who she has seen has grown into, you know, an actual really good dad and really loves him and really cares about him. And this would be the best for Billy as opposed to best for her. And I think that was her redemption as a character.
Yeah.
As a woman and as a mother. So...
You know, we've talked a lot about the great performances of Meryl Streep throughout the film. And by the way, she's in half the movie, which is impressive.
This was her breakout performance.
Yes, because I didn't expect her to be gone for half the movie.
I didn't either. It makes sense for the story. On the poster, it has both of them and Billy, but it really should have just been Dustin Hoffman and Billy.
there's like a sad picture of Joanna.
Joanna in the background, just like looming in the window, just watching, which was really cool. Creepy, by the way. Yeah. Always watching her like in the window,
super
staring.
Creepy. Yeah,
and I'm like, Jesus.
I think in a custody trial in 2020 that comes up. It's like, yeah, why is she lingering across the street and not saying hello?
She's obviously not well.
Completely. I just mean it's the sort of thing that that I feel like would be a lot more attention would be paid to.
Watching like she's about to kill him.
Is that mom across the street? No, that wouldn't make sense. Why wouldn't she come see me?
I mean, Louise. In another genre, this could have turned into a thriller.
I know, for real.
Seriously.
But I think Dustin Hoffman is, of course, also great in here, but we should pay special attention to Justin Henry, who plays Billy, who is a 7-year-old actor who had no acting experience before this. What were you going to say, Alexa?
Yes. We'll talk about Justin Henry first before I have a slew of things to talk about with Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, okay. Well, let's say, yeah.
No, but Justin Henry, he got nominated for an Academy Award for his performance in this, and I thought that was very well deserved because I was watching it with my friend, and both of us were just in awe of how well this kid acted. He was just so spot on with all of his reactions and just, you know, child actors, they're kind of hit or miss for the most part. I think my favorite one was, now I forget his name from E.T.
Drew Barrymore.
No! Drew Barrymore.
Henry is, I think, his last name, actually. I don't know the actor you mean.
You know, he was one of the ones that I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, look, a lot of times you notice kid actors when they're either really good or really bad.
Yeah.
And this one shows because he's really good. And just imagine this movie if they had cast a kid who was really bad.
I know. Oh, yeah. Terrible. Yeah. Dustin Hoffman apparently did not want Justin Henry for the role. He wanted a funny-looking kid because I guess he's just, you know, remarking on how funny-looking he is as a person.
And also, I mean, Dustin Hoffman could possibly... But if your mom's Meryl Streep, you should be a good-looking kid.
But... They say that Justin's tender, familiar way with Dustin on screen tests changed his mind, along with the realization that Billy Kramer shouldn't look like Dustin. He should look like Meryl, a constant reminder of the absent Joanna. So
I was going to say, too, with Justin Henry, he was not only did he get nominated, he's still to date the youngest person to ever get nominated.
That is true.
At 8.
That's amazing.
And I was watching this on Amazon Prime. One of the like notes that popped up is that they actually found him by accident.
Oh, did they?
They found him. Apparently, he was, I think, one of the producer's neighbors. Oh. So he wasn't even just some random, you know, he wasn't even someone who came in to audition, really.
Right.
They knew him because he was a neighbor.
Wow. And then also, they shot this film chronologically, very much like E.T. for Justin.
Oh, that's so actually that, makes
so
sense.
So that
yeah.
the reason being that, you know, he could, the story would be real to him, that he would react in real time and experience it instead of acting.
Yeah, and
it.
I mean, he has some tremendous emotional moments in here.
Henry Thomas.
I had the word Henry, so yeah.
But they shot that chronologically as well.
Well, also because E.T. insisted on it. It was in his writer.
E.T.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great impression. Make sure we isolate that. You know, just there are some incredibly emotional moments all the way throughout. The one that resounded with me is when he wouldn't eat his dinner and he goes to get that ice cream out and you're like, oh, he's going to do it. And I hate you. Mm-hmm. And then, well, I hate you too, you ungrateful little shit. And I'm like, oh, I feel all these emotions. Yep. I've never said quite that to my son, and he hasn't. Well, maybe he's not tall enough to get the ice cream out, but there's definitely those times where he's like, oh, would you just eat your dinner? Come on. Like, don't put me through this. What were you going to say?
The ice cream scene was also improvised, and the only reason it ended up in the script is because the director liked it so much.
Was it improvised on set, or
it was on set? Yeah.
Oh, wow,
yeah,
that's fascinating because that really connected with me because, yeah, and you know, I have certainly, you know, I have a 4-year-old. I don't have a 7-year-old, but you try to apply logic, and it's you know, come on, you had this last week, and you said you liked it, and I said I liked it, and you said, well, I like it too, and he's like, no, it's yucky, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's like probably about half the dinners a week one of my kids is going to tell me it's yucky, and you know, and usually it works. It's like, well, if you want ice cream, you got to finish it. It's like, oh, all right, I do want ice cream.
I think we would be remiss if we did not talk about Dustin Hoffman, not just his performance in the role, but the fact that he is a well-known method actor, and he abused Meryl Streep on set. Did you hear any of these? I've never heard that. Okay, so first, we'll talk about his performance. I thought he was incredible. I really loved his performance, and I think that he is an amazing actor. However, he's a method actor. So Meryl Streep had just lost her fiance, John Cazale, or Cazale, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. And he'd take it upon himself to get performances out of her.
Right.
That's not what you need to do as an actor. You focus on yourself and what you need to do as an actor. You can abuse yourself if you'd like, but he would like mention her recently deceased fiance in the courtroom scene right before she had to like get really emotional after you know, the lawyer was just
sure
pummeling her with terrible things, and he walked up to her and mentioned his name just to you know, get a rise out of her. But the worst was that he actually slapped her right before the scene where she's – so the very first scene, they walk out to the hallway. She's going into the elevator to leave. Yeah. Right before they walked out in the hallway, he didn't even ask. He just straight up smacked her across the face, and they performed this. Meryl didn't stop anything. The director saw. They didn't stop anything. She performed the scene, and then she was apparently furious at the fact that obviously I would be too.
No, understandably.
Don't take it upon yourself. First off, don't touch me. And that's just completely inappropriate and on so many levels. But then also there's a scene. Sorry, not to go on and on, but there's like quite a few stories. They were sitting in the restaurant. It's when she comes back finally and is going to tell.
And he ends up throwing the wine against the wall.
Yes,
yeah.
He did not tell her that he was going to throw the wine glass against the wall. He just told the camera off. He's like, "Hey, so if I throw this wine glass, if I throw it against the wall, where will it be seen? Where should I do it?" And the camera op's like, "Well, just do it right over there, I guess." And so it performed the scene, and again, Meryl was completely taken aback at the fact that she wasn't even told anything. He just went ahead and did it right in front of her.
Right.
He was apparently just very, very verbally abusive as well. It just didn't.
Well, it seems consistent for an actor who apparently works well with David O. Russell. because you have always heard of him as a director doing all these sorts of things. But again, that's the director, and you can think that's right or wrong, but it's also the director's decision on how to elicit performances. So, yeah, I know. I hadn't heard any of this.
Yeah, he shattered and sent glass shards into her hair. Her response was, next time you do that, I'd appreciate you letting me know.
Right.
So the thing about Dustin Hoffman was that he had already done quite a few films at this point, and he was a, you know, everyone
one of
knew
them
him.
Vastly overrated Midnight Cowboy, but go on.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Graduate.
No, that's okay.
I like that
movie. I like The Graduate. Yeah. Graduate's good. Yeah.
But, you know, this was Meryl Streep's first big role.
Yeah, sure.
Breakout performance, and, you know, she could have easily cowered, you know, away from Dustin, but she held her ground, and she was like, it's unacceptable.
Well, the, you know, obviously it's wrong across the board, but just the idea that, you know, knowing what Meryl Streep is capable of now, I don't think any of those tactics are necessary to get a good performance out of her.
It was very demeaning. It was like, I don't really trust that you're going to be able to, like, one of the reasons why they cast her for this role, Dustin was so forecasting her for this because she was a no-name basically at the time,
sure,
was because he knew that she had recently lost her fiance, and so he wanted to use that trauma to get a good performance out of her in the movie. And I'm like, this is just backwards. It's terrible. But I mean, it worked, but he didn't need to do that, you know?
And I have to say, I'm not surprised to hear all this about Dustin.
Yeah.
When, you know, everything with the Me Too movement was coming out, there was an article published about him in 2017 by Anna Graham Hunter. Mm-hmm. And she was 17 when apparently he was sexually harassing her. And not just her, but she was on set with him. And he was doing it to all the stars, slapping butts. And so, and like just being incredibly inappropriate. And this is when he was a little bit older. So,
yes, this yeah. I mean, not that it would have ever been right, but it's also you're so much older.
Yeah.
I think it comes off as, you know, exponentially worse.
Yeah, like he, I think, was in his 50s when she was 17.
I don't want to rush us off this topic, but we don't have a lot of time. So I do want to talk about the awards for the film.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that it won Best Picture in at the 52nd Emmys, Oscars. And I always find it's interesting what else was nominated. All That Jazz, Breaking Away, Norma Rae, Apocalypse Now. Best Director, Robert Benton, won against Bob Fosse. Peter Yates, also for Breaking Away, the director of Wakaja Falls. I'm not going to try to say his friend's name, but also against Francis Ford Coppola for Apocalypse Now. Dustin Hoffman won for Best Actor. Meryl Streep won for Supporting Actress because she's, again, in half the film. Dustin Hoffman beating Jack Lemmon, Al Pacino, Roy Scheider, and Peter Sellers. So, you know, I mean, it's... It's always impressive when something wins, but when you read some of the things that they win against, you're like, oh, these are some of the greatest films of that era, you know, and this bested it.
I don't think anybody back then had ever seen a movie so realistic to what so many people were going through at that time.
Yeah.
And so I just feel like they felt like it was a song of their people. And a lot of, I read a lot where people were just blown away and very emotional after watching this movie. And I could see why. But does it hold up, right?
Right. Well, we'll get to that in one second, because I wanted to point out, we did mention that Justin Henry was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and he lost to Melvin Douglas for Being There, but he was also nominated against Robert Duvall in Apocalypse Now and Mickey Rooney in The Black Stallion.
Wow.
That was never going to win. But Frederick Forrest for a film called The Rose that I've literally never heard of in my life. But that's just, you know, I can just imagine, you know, the sort of split screen at those Oscars when it's him and Robert Duvall and, you know, and then
little Justin Henry.
Little Justin Henry. So, yes, the question that we always ask is, does it hold up? What do you think? Oh, there's our does it hold up music.
I thought it would be more of a drum roll, but
well, that's in honor of All That Jazz for Bob Fosse. What do you think, Alexa?
I think it does. I think it does hold up. Yes, there are some gender roles here that aren't really prevalent these days, but I do think that it does hold up because I thought it very realistically portrayed a marriage and, you know, a devolving of a marriage.
But my understanding is 40 years later, you know, divorce, in custody battles, they often, it takes a lot to not award custody to the mother. Just
right.
from people that I know who have been through this. That's just legally, my understanding.
It is legally out of date, and they could have done a joint custody. That was just completely...
Yeah, that seems to be the most common. You know, my sister has that with her ex-husband.
They just completely went over that. They're like, no, it must go to one or the other.
I mean, it might not have been a thing at the time. What do you think, Rachel? Did it hold up?
I think it holds up. I think even in today's world, there are still places in America, and maybe not even in America, other countries as well, where females are still going through that identity crisis where they are trapped in a situation where they can't, they're not working and they don't know what they want to do with their lives. Mm-hmm. And even if we, you know, even if many of us don't have to go through that anymore, there are still places where it happens.
It does.
I would say that for me, it definitely holds up. And, you know, we talked a lot about sort of this decision that Joanna makes to go away. And, you know, look, unfortunately, all you have to do is scroll through headlines and you just hear about terrible stories about, you know, parents, either gender, that just can't handle their life. And they don't take the step away, and then they do something terrible to their children or to an entire house full of people. You hear about some of these terrible things, and you're like, yeah, maybe, you know, if somebody can get away and figure themselves out and be like, okay, I'm ready to be a parent again, you have to deal with those repercussions. But I think in a modern perspective, it's a lot easier to understand Joanna. And just she's like, I have to go. Yes, for me. But if I'm not sorted out, this isn't going to be good for Billy
without
either.
Saying the words clinical depression.
Yeah.
They were portraying that for her.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
You know, they weren't talking about it at the time, but it was an accurate portrayal of what that is. So. That was good.
Well, so I guess we're in agreement that it all held up. And, you know, let's I'm going to need a little while before I check out Marriage Story. I can't go through another movie.
I thought it was sadder,
so
to be honest.
This was sadder or
no,
Marriage Story?
Marriage Story.
Well, then I'm definitely not going to watch it anytime soon. So we are done for this week. We will be back next week at our new time of 3 p.m. on Tuesday. I did almost say Wednesday. But we will be back talking about the 1960 film The Apartment, the Billy Wilder film. It'll be a return for Jack Lemmon to this show. Shirley MacLaine, Fred McMurray also in that film. So we will talk about that next week. But until then, Rachel, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Rachel Goodman, or on my author Instagram account, at Rachel Radner Author, if you're a fan of Stumptown, Doctor Who, Outlander, and Larry Dale, Curb Your Enthusiasm. You can find me on those shows as well.
Alexa Capiello, where do people find you?
On Instagram.
Not Twitter. Don't bother.
Don't bother. No, I'm kidding. You can follow me there, too. But on Instagram, at Alexa Cappy, C-A-P-P-Y.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at ChristianDMZ. And yes, as Rachel mentioned, Mondays on AfterBuzz TV at 3 p.m. for Curb Your Enthusiasm. And also over on AfterBuzz TV, Thursday nights at 9 for Star Trek Picard. That is all the time we have for this week, but we will see you at the movies.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.